Welcome to the Seymour Putter Company's presentation of our new video podcast, The Putting Couch. We are with Dr. Bob Winters, one of the great sports psychologists in the entire world, and his focus has mostly been on golf and putting, so we're going to tap into his expertise some more. The very first part in this series, Doctor talked about the seven mental mistakes that most guys make when they're, and men and women make when they're putting poorly. And wow, it's a litmus test for each of us. And I think when we hear it, we see ourselves probably many, many times, because they're not mutually exclusive. You can put all seven together and really struggle with your putting. So it's interesting. Last night I happened to be watching a really cool Golf Channel show on the history of golf at St. Andrews. And they talked about Doug Sanders. And Doug Sanders, playing with Lee Trevino in the final round, came oh so close to winning the coveted Open Championship at St. Andrews, the championship that every golfer who's ever dreamt wants to win. And it came down to one lousy 2-foot putt on the 18th green for him to win that Open Championship. And in the process of that putt, so many things went wrong. He bent over to pick up a leaf or something like that, and then he'd never reset himself. And I was just thinking to myself, you know, how can that happen? I mean, this was a putt that I'm sure he makes 1,000 out of 1,000 times. And the one thing that he wanted most in his life was 2 feet away, and it didn't happen for him. It was devastation. He went on to lose in a playoff to Jack Nicklaus. And I know that's probably one of those moments that is just so heartbreaking, but it does represent what happens in putting. And I thought, I don't know, Doc, I thought I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Well, you know, thanks. It's great to be with you, company.
Thanks for your time.
We have been had a great association, me being on the Seymour Tour team for many years now. And it's so funny, Jim, that you talk about Doug Sanders, you know, the golf's ambassador peacock, all right, you know, of all of his flamboyant, you know, color schemes. I had the chance to meet, you know, Doug and talk with him a lot about, you know, different things before he passed away. And I had seen him and do exhibitions and followed him. And I really love Doug Sanders. But he told me something. It wasn't just in confidence, but it was just to me. And he said, you know, here's the real story behind that. And I want to kind of, you know, pick up on that. On that 18th hole there at St. Andrews, he was playing with Lee Trevino. And everyone knows that Doug Sanders was, you know, golf's flamboyant, colorful ambassador. He would add great, you know, what I would call monochromatic color patterns. He would wear purple sweater, purple shirt, purple pants, and he would have, you know, his golf shoes dyed to match all of his color combinations. But on the 18th tee, Lee Trevino, you know, handed him a tee, and he said, "Hey, partner, use this tee." He goes, "This was the one used by Tony Lima when I think he won the Open in 1964. It was a white tee." Doug Sanders never used a white tee. He always used colored tees. But he thought, okay, he put it down. And I don't know if that was precursor, you know, to, you know, bad events. But as he was going up, and he had that about almost a 3-foot side hiller, and it was sort of a little downhill left to right. As he went, you know, up, you know, to actually approach the putt, he told me that he was being sort of heckled. There was a couple of people in the crowds that were sort of yelling at him. Now, if he had actually been in tune, he would actually have gated out, what that means to attenuate, to block out that noise. But he sort of had some rabbit ears at that time. Obviously, you know, his anxiety level was pounding. He had this 3-footer. He steps up, and he had sort of that mallet head putter of his, and he sees something down. And what he was thinking, though, as he was picking, you know, that leaf up, he, you know, and brushing it away, he told me, he said, "When I make this putt, I'm going to turn around and I'm going to actually stick my tongue out at that person in the gallery." This is really what he was thinking. Now, of that putt, they were thinking about, you know, he's looking at the line or whatever. But that was really what he told me. I mean, that comes right straight from the horse's mouth. And I don't know if this story's ever been told before. And so that's why I really want to reveal it here. So as he goes through and he goes down and just brushes it off, he comes back and gets resettled or trying to get reset. And legend has it that Ben Hogan, who was watching it, you know, from Fort Worth, Texas, is telling him, back off, start your routine over. But he actually stood over it, and then sort of pushed it, and he pushes it out, and it's almost as if he wanted to go and rake it back into the hole. And the point, you know, what, you know, I'm trying to say with Doug Sanders, and the rest is history. The next day, you know, Jack, you know, was asked, do you feel bad about, you know, defeating Doug? He said, no, not really. He goes, Doug had a chance to win it on that 18th hole. Now, when, you know, we're here in this sudden victory playoff, he goes, it's either one of ours to win. And I won today. And I think that's how Jack, you know, sort of rationalized in his mind. Obviously, everybody feels bad, you know, for Doug Sanders at that time. And Doug said this wasn't the first time. He said he had two or three other putts, I think, for the U.S. Open. I think one for the Masters. He said he was about 4 inches, 4 inches away from being in the World Golf Hall of Fame. I mean, it was just that close. But he was in the Texas Hall of Fame, and he felt great about that. But we were talking about that. But it just goes to show the importance of, you know, focus. Because of all the mental strategies, of all the mental components that people say, what's the most important thing, you know, for great performance? And it's your ability to focus, you know, on this present moment and in this situation. Can you, you know, funnel all of your energy into executing the task? So when I tell people, I want you to do three things, and they go, what's that? I go, I want you to focus on execution. Just stepping in there, doing what you want to do. But you have to do it with a very directed focus, because I would say 99.9% of all golfers who, you know, struggle with putting or their whole game, they go into a shot with what I call doubt. And it is a doubt focus. It is a don't focus. Don't leave it short. Don't miss it. Don't, you know, screw up. Don't embarrass yourself. So the word doubt, D-O-U-B-T, and I'm always telling my students, it's like you put a hash between the O and the U, and I go, do you believe this? Do you believe this is going to go in? And if you do, and you actually get into the do, like Nike, their slogan, three words, just do it. If you get into the do, the U-B-T stands for you can do unbelievably big things. I've always liked, you know, the acronyms, but that's the whole point. Because when we start talking about putting confidence, and I remember doing the interviews, you know, for one of my first books here that I did, and this was The Mental Art of Putting. All right, you know, that's still available. It's still, you know, a great seller. You can get it, you know, at Amazon or whatever. But we were going out on tour, Dr. Patrick Cohn, my great friend and colleague, wonderful sports scientist. And we were interviewing, you know, players on the tour at the time, getting a lot of interviews for the book. And I remember going up to Bill Glasson, who was, you know, a great, you know, athlete. And I asked him, I said, what does putting confidence mean to you? And he looked at me and he kind of smiled. He goes, that's an oxymoron. He goes, those two words don't go together. He goes, that's like sanitary sewer and jumbo shrimp. He goes, putting confidence, you know, and I had to laugh. And I go, what do you mean? He goes, I haven't made a putt, you know, over 8 feet in about 3 weeks, 4 weeks. I haven't made anything. And so it just sort of led to me sort of working with Bill Glasson about, you know, where's your focus? And we're talking about Doug Sanders. Where was his focus? So I asked Bill, and it was like, you know, the Tuesday before the Scottsdale Open back in, I think, 1994. And I asked him, I said, show me what you're doing here on this putt. And that, you know, now it's the Waste Management Open, you know, it's a huge, and there are a lot of people, you know, back there at TPC Scottsdale back then. There might have been 200, 250 people around the green watching everyone putt. And there was Fred Couples and, you know, Craig Stadler, the Walrus, and everybody there. And Bill said, well, I'm going to go up here and I'm going to actually just putt it right here over this little spot here. And I go, show me. And he's got a 20 footer and he goes up. He says, oh, someplace, you know, right around in here. And I go, that's not specific enough. I said, come back here. Really actually tell me exactly where this ball roll line is going to be. show me where, you know, you think this apex is or where this ball needs to roll over specifically in order for that ball to go in the hole. And he goes, okay. So he comes back. He's got his caddy with him. And he says, it's going to go over right here. And I said, do you have the ability to do that? Do you have the ability to roll that ball right there over your mark? And he goes, I think so. I said, let's see one. So he steps up and he goes through his routine. And it's got, you know, a little break, got about maybe a foot break on it. And he steps up there. And that ball goes right over that mark, right into the hole. He looks back at me and he goes, I haven't made one of those in a while. And I go, well, let's go back over here. So we moved about 2 feet, you know, to the left on the different putt. Tell me the same thing. Go up and do the same thing. He made three in a row. And on his third one, there were people there in the crowd. They were sitting there, they were laughing, you know, clapping. And he looked at me and he goes, is that all it is? And I go, well, you're a trained athlete. You're one of the very best in the world. I said, before you were just, well, I'm gonna roll it here someplace. You know, it's like, you know, I'll try to hit it here or maybe it'll work. That's weak motivation. Doesn't give you any specific, you know, direction for where the ball wants to go. And so he goes ahead and he goes, I'm going to start doing this. And so, you know, we actually worked for maybe about another half hour to hour. And so I left him. And so I was doing some things. And actually, we followed him around the first couple of days. He did really well. And he's one of these players, when he gets in the lead, he's like Ray Floyd. I mean, he was a front runner. I mean, he would just go. When he was on, he was really on. And I get back home later that night and I look and I, you know, see, you know, the TV, Bill Glasson just wins, you know, the TPC Scottsdale Open, the Phoenix Open. And, you know, he attributed it to, you know, the putting lesson that he just had, you know, to be a little bit more specific. He had to give himself a better focus. And that's really, you know, what, you know, great putting is all about. And I thought, you know, today, maybe here on this podcast, we'd talk about the 10 commandments to really great putting. All right. And really what it entails. So would you like to kind of get into that?
No, that's fantastic. The Putting Couch is brought to you by the Seymour Putter Company. And, you know, we are all things putting. We love to talk about putting. Our mission is to spread the word on putting. So, you know, we want people to spend more time, more energy, understanding how they can putt, how they can putt better. At Seymour, we have a technology called rifle scope technology that eliminates variables. You hide the red dot. And you know you're locked in. You know you've got the right line on your putt. You know you have the right loft. You've taken variables away so you can focus on making the putt. And so there's so many things that you can do with a Seymour putter to help you become a great putter with the stroke. And so that can then lead you to these 10 commandments. And I just wanted to throw out one more thing real quick. We did talk about Doug Sanders' heartbreak at St. Andrews. And of course, the last vignette was Zach Johnson winning at St. Andrews in 2015. In one of the great final round putting performances, there were 15 players ahead of him heading into the final round, which was delayed till a Monday. But he ended up playing 22 holes, a four-hole playoff, and he made 10 birdies. And if you look, he made a 30-footer on number 18, which is iconic, one of the great putts ever involved in winning an Open Championship. And then he birdied number one and number two in the playoffs. So, you know, three birdies right when you need it, you know, part of his 10. And as you said, you don't win anything at any level without great putting. And you certainly don't win major championships without unbelievable putting. And this is the 25-year anniversary of the Seymour Putter Company, meaning it's also the 25-year anniversary of Payne Stewart, probably the greatest putting performance in the history of the U.S. Open. 24 putts in the final round at Pinehurst to beat Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson and David Duval and Vijay Singh and everybody else that wanted that U.S. Open back then. And again, coming down the stretch, those putts that he made at 16, at 17, at 18, the longest putt ever to win the U.S. Open on the final hole. So something with those gentlemen, Zach Johnson, Payne Stewart, allowed them to win the major championships. They had to putt great at the end. They had to somehow focus into something that was going to be a positive outcome. They saw it happen and they made it happen. And I think in your 10 commandments, there's probably something in there that we can take away from those guys.
It truly is, Jimmy. And that's the great thing about Seymour putters with the rifle scope technology is that, you know, when you set it up, I mean, you know you're in the perfect setup position. You don't have to worry about any of these other variables. So it frees up your mind to really get into the distance, the direction, the feel, monitoring, how hard I need to make it. So it allows you to be more into the putt versus thinking about, oh, I have to have this right. So you're not really reinvesting and reinventing the wheel about, setup, posture, and all that. It just, sets you right in there. You talk about, Payne Stewart making that putt and Zach making all those putts. Well, that goes right into my 10 commandments, for great putting. Because number one, the first, commandment for great putting is that you have to really embody is that every putt, no matter the distance, can be made. And I'm sure that's exactly what Payne Stewart said. And the funny thing is he had that, 30-footer for par on the final hole there at Pinehurst in 1999. And I think, the night, Saturday night going into Sunday's final round, his wife Tracy said, if there's anything you just need to do, you just need to keep that head still. And that's just, has always been a constant, an axiom, in putting literature, putting instruction, keeping that head, that body still. Because I remember he goes over to her and he grabs her face and he says, I did exactly what you told me. I kept my head still, but he did it, with that beautiful, brass headed Seymour putter. But that's the whole point. But every putt you step into, it needs to be made. It reminds me back in about 2006, 2007, when Jack Nicklaus opened up his new golf course up there, at Benton Harbor, Michigan. And he was doing a nice shootout, sort of an opening on his prize golf course that he designed. And he had Johnny Miller, and Johnny Miller was playing with Arnold Palmer, and Jack was playing with Tom Watson. And people can go on YouTube and watch it. And it's the greatest thing because Arnold had this 120-foot putt up over this huge hill. And Arnold got it about, maybe two-thirds of the way up, and the ball comes all the way back. Now, Johnny Miller pulls out his wedge. Now he's on the green and he's actually going to putt. He's going to hit that shot on the wedge. And Jack's sitting there going, oh, hell no, you're not going to take a divot here on opening day on this. And so Jack says, no, don't do that. And Johnny says, I can't putt it. We hear Johnny go, I can't putt it. And Jack says, yeah, you can putt it. And Johnny goes, no, I can't. Jack says, he walks down there to him. He says, you want me to putt it for you? And he goes, yeah, you show me, Jack, show me this putt. Nicklaus throws the ball down. He doesn't really even aim up and everything. He steps up there, gives it a whack, and lo and behold, the ball goes in. And everybody's sitting there. And here's the whole, the gist of the story that I thought was really funny. Here was Jack Nicklaus. What? Jack has won six, Masters. Here was Arnie. Arnie had won four Masters jackets. Here was Tom Watson. Tom has won, three Masters jackets? Two or three? I think three. Johnny Miller hadn't won any. Here's all these three guys. All of them. Nicklaus has made putts. Tom Watson was a great putter. Arnie was a great putter. And Johnny Miller, talked about his putting. And I thought, at the same time, I'm going, see, Johnny was going, there's no way. There's no way. And here's Jack Nicklaus going, oh, there's a way. And so for me, that just confirmed number one. Great putters, they believe that every putt can be made, no matter the distance. And the great thing about that is they don't care about statistics, probabilities, projections, all that. When you look at here is the probability rate by a PGA Tour, they're not thinking about the probability rate. A great putter, their first commandment is, I want to make this putt. This and that's putt. Why great putters make 30-footers, 40-footers, 16-footers, and they don't care about the statistics. You can throw statistics right out the window. Because that is really what it goes into my philosophy of possibility putting. If there's a hole in that surface of the green, it's possible to get that ball in the hole. Now, I realize, that it doesn't mean you have to go gunning for every putt, but you have to go in, with the attitude and the mindset that every putt can and should can be made.
Fantastic.
Which leads us into commandment number two.
Okay.
That if every putt can be made, then number two is super important is that every putt that you putt deserves to be made. And what that means is you have, full intention, full commitment, full trust, that this putt, whether it's a 5-footer, 10-footer, 25-footer, it deserves that same focus, that same level of directed attention so that you can step in there and make that putt. You know, so those first two, you know, if the viewers and listeners are hearing this, if you step up in every putt and say, you know what, this can be made, I can do this, and it deserves to be made, you are already on your way to actually developing a great mindset, you know, for effective putting.
What a great way to start.
Now, number three is something that, you know, I had gotten from Stephen Covey, you know, the Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. And he says, begin with the end in mind. And I love that because, you know, great putters, they see where the ball needs to go into the hole. They see sort of in that terminal phase of the putt, you know, the final phase of the putt, they see the delivery speed of that ball going into the hole and also the entrance points going into that hole. So they actually begin their read of the putt about seeing what's going on at the last 3 and 4 feet. And people always ask me, why is that? Well, because the ball, you know, rotation of the ball is slowing down. Gravitational and friction and physics takes over. And so the ball will probably break more or be more affected by the slope or what's happening at the hole. That's why you will always see great putters on tour go up and look around, you know, the hole to see what's happening. They're not just looking at the inclination. They're also trying to find what I call the front door. Where is, you know, the opening? Where is the absolute, you know, center slot where I want this ball going into the hole so it maximizes the whole capture area of the hole? So, you know, that's a big one, beginning with the end in mind.
Yep.
Now, commandment number four, being decisive. Being decisive eliminates the doubt. You know, most putts are missed not because of a poor stroke. They are missed because of a poor putting constitution. People step in, they go, I haven't made any all day, and why should I make this one? Well, I hope you'll make this one. Well, let's see what happens here. I'll give it a go. There's no positive expectancy. There's no positive absolution. This is what I'm doing. There's no putting routine or putting process that says, this is what I'm going to do to ensure that this ball is going into the hole. All right. So being decisive is the conduit to creating putting confidence. Any thoughts about those? You know, those four that I just gave you?
That's fantastic. I'm going to give you my cliff notes then. Number one is every putt can be made. Number two is then if it can be made, it deserves to be made. It deserves your attention and your belief that it can be made. Number three is, okay, if you're going to make it, you got to know how is it going in? Where is that front door? And so that's number three is to look at how and where that ball is going to go in the hole. And then number four is you have to be decisive. If you're going to go through all of that and you're going to make the putt, then you have to be decisive in your stroke is what I'm hearing and your mindset. So those are the first four. Are these declining in importance or are all 10 commandments equally important?
Every one of them is equal. I mean, equally important. Okay. If you can actually incorporate 1, 2, 9 or 10.
Yeah.
I mean, I almost assure you that your putting will improve exponentially.
You need to think about that even just walking up to the green, either getting out of your cart or walking up to the fairway. That should already be the mentality that you're thinking before you even step onto the green.
Well, I think that's really what, you know, good putters, you know, do. I mean, they expect to make putts. I mean, I haven't talked to a putter yet and go, what do you expect? Boy, I expect to miss this damn thing. I've never heard
a lot of them do, but they don't play well.
I mean, that's the whole point. Well, the people that
what's
say
number
that,
five?
Yeah.
What's number five?
A putt is a putt is a putt. No matter if it's 5 foot, 10 foot, if it's for a par, a bogey, a birdie, or whatever, you have to have this neutral value. It's just a putt. It's the distance. It's a 5 foot putt. See, we put perceived value on these putts. We start labeling these putts and we say, this is a huge putt. This is a big putt. Oh, I need to make this putt. It's like Judge Smales in Caddyshack, you know, when he pulls out the Billy Beru and he has to make that putt, you know, for $40,000. And he's talking to his putter. He goes, oh, Billy, this is a big one. This is a big one. He absolutely slobbers that ball in the hole, but that's really what, you know, putting self-imposed pressure is. You're saying this is a big putt. But if you go through the process and just have a neutral value and go, every putt deserves to be made. So whether it's 5 foot, 10 foot, 15 foot, the golf ball doesn't know really what, you know, it's putting for. You do as a human being. And sometimes this perceived value puts this, you know, innate pressure on ourselves. I have to make it. I must make it. I should make it. And that's why in golf psychology, sports psychology, we say that's the tyranny of the shoulds. You know, I should have made that. I should make this, right? So we've got to get away from that. Every putt you step into needs to be made, you know, deserves to be made.
Yep.
And you should want to make that, right? Now, we go.
Is there really a sixth? I mean, these five are so good. Is there a sixth?
I've got a bunch.
Real quick. I mean, we're at the 25-minute mark.
Maybe we roll this over.
Yeah, let's talk about, you know, we'll go to the next five. We'll go to, you know,
let's go six to ten.
We got the first five.
Maybe a little tease.
We got the first five of the Ten Commandments. But, I mean, if you think about it, if we go back through these first, you know, five here really quick, every putt can be made. Every putt deserves to be made. You begin with every putt in, you know, in the mind. And being decisive eliminates doubt. And a putt is a putt is a putt. I mean, what we're doing here now, we're saying, hey, listen, putting is a deserving skill. And if I can actually get my mind, my thoughts, my attitude, and my behaviors in line, you know, I can become a successful putter. And that's why, you know, I've written the Ten Commandments of Mind Power Putting. And that's really what these mental keys are. And these are the first five. And I can't wait to get to the next episode to do the next five. Because if you like these, you're going to love the next five.
You know, and I'll tell you what, we need to live by Ten Commandments. And so, you know, this is powerful stuff. I just can't believe how much fun it is to talk about so many things putting, all things putting. It's fun. It's complex. It's something worth putting time into. And it is the great equalizer. So I don't care how bad you hit your driver or how much you might be struggling with other parts of your game. When you get up to that green, you should be the best player in your group, and you can be that. And Dr. Bob Winters is helping us learn how we can become that great putter that maybe we never even thought about. So, Doc, we'll talk to you with the next one.
All right. I look forward to it.
We appreciate you joining us. If you haven't subscribed to the show, make sure you do wherever you're listening. Be sure to leave a rating and review, because that's how we get the Putting Couch podcast content in front of more people. Also, take a screenshot and share it on social media and tag us at Seymour Putters or hashtag Team Seymour.